Welcome to Star Party, an astrology and tarot podcast that serves up both soulful evolution and bedazzled celebration. I'm astrologer and hypnotist Sandy Citron.
And I'm astrologer and tarot reader Bess Matassa. We're so glad you're here. Let's get the party started.
Hey, Star Party people. We are so happy to be back here with you. This is Sandy, and I'm here with the lovely Bess.
The lovely. I like it.
The lovely. That's like me being a game show host or something.
Yeah.
From the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, turning over some tiles, seeing what's been transformed beneath.
Ooh, bringing it together, because our topic today is transformation, in honor of Scorpio season, but meant to be listened to at any time. And I'm really excited to see how I transform over the next hour as we record this episode.
I know. Your cells are going to slough off. You're going to grow whole new worlds of intrigue, I'm sure. It sounds like we're like petri dishes, but we kind of are. We're petri dishes of people, right? You know,
I feel like a full-on petri dish right now. So
yeah. Talk about transformation. I mean, you're undergoing a very physicalized animal, like
levels. Growing eyeballs and hair and fingers.
what's the fruit? The fruit score, like the how big is the baby? Listeners, if you don't know, Sandy is pregnant. That's what we're talking about.
So I've switched over from fruit to strange animals, uncommon animals. So right now I've got a prairie dog inside of me. Last week or 2 weeks ago, it was an Atlantic puffin. And I forgot, like I looked that up and I was like, oh, a puffin. Okay, whatever. And then I forgot. And then like 3 days later, I had a dream that I was giving birth to a puffin. And I thought it was the weirdest thing. I was like, why would I come up with that? What is going on in my mind that I thought I was giving birth to a puffin?
Wow.
And then I remembered. Yeah. I think for vegetables, it's like a Napa cabbage or something like that.
Yeah. I wonder if you could pair the uncommon animals with the vegetables so they could have a little meal, you know, have their own little astral snacks. Like, would the prairie dog be inclined to eat a Napa cabbage? That's the question. Well, I guess we don't want anybody eating anybody else, though.
I'm okay with that. I have Mercury and Scorpio. Speaking of Scorpio, so like gross things don't gross me out that much.
Right.
Like, I'm totally cool with that.
Right. Totally. Yeah. And you know, I love some grossness. So yeah. Anyway, while we're not talking about cannibalizing our children, we can move on. Now
I'm remembering some gross things you've said at the podcast that did really gross me out. So who knows? Sometimes I get grossed out. Sometimes I don't.
There's some Venus and Virgo moments.
Yeah. If it's like something physical, it's more gross to me. But if it's like a macabre or kind of like horror, I can't categorize myself. Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? All right. We're ready. All right. We're ready for prairie dogs. We're ready for Napa cabbages. Whatever you've got growing inside of you right now, listeners, it's okay. And it's ready and available to be snacked upon. This is going to be the thrust of this episode.
We're gonna just see what's rising up to the surface and ready to change and transform.
Yeah.
So, Bess, initial thoughts on this big, huge topic that is so massive, it's kind of hard to wrap my head around.
Yeah.
Of transformation.
So I kind of tapped into my emotional journey with this one. Like, it was interesting to watch how I felt when I first started looking at the topic and where I ended up getting. And at first I really was like ready to go fucking hard on this topic. Like, my Pluto in the 12th house opposite my sun, you know, Mars, Venus conjunction was like ready to be like, burn it down, build it up, like Phoenix, like very, very intense. And, you know, then I sort of took a moment and I was like, why is that not feeling like quite the tone that's being like asked to be brought forward in this moment? And, you know, as we all are, of course, if we're alive on the planet in this moment, we're all inevitably always changing. And I think that's a really important question too, to look at. What is the difference, if any, between change and transformation? Is there something elevated, you know, with transformation where we imbue it with more meaning, or it's somehow more epic, or, you know, is transformation just another flavor of change? But, you know, like all of us on the planet, like you are growing unknown animals inside of you. I've been in a period of pretty intense transformation the past few weeks, or I've sensed that I'm sort of entering a threshold kind of into transformation period. It's been massively uncomfortable, you know, but I haven't been in the space of like, whoa, the epic, heroic, burn it down, rise up. I'm realizing more and more that that, I think, happens, at least for me, on the other side sometimes of transformation, where I'm able to then kind of narrate. I mean, there's glimpses of that. There's glimpses of those epic kinds of shifts, you know, as things unfold. But I think what I've really been feeling this time around in this current period of transformation is the emptiness. And what I mean by that is that I'm feeling like what's gone is leaving, or sort of sloughing off, is exfoliating, but I don't know what's coming. And there's a kind of void. There's a kind of void space in that. And, you know, it reminds me, I think I invoked her on the last episode or two episodes ago, but the therapist who was also, you know, she was a Jungian analyst, and well, she still is, but an astrologer who really shepherded me through the 2013-2014 like big psychological breakdown I had. I remember her saying to me a lot during that period, the old vehicle is breaking down, but we can't see the new vehicle yet, or we haven't formed it, and that's by design. Like you couldn't, you know, and there's something about being able to be in the emptiness, believing, even if it's the tiniest shred of belief in something that we can't yet see, and how to kind of hold ourselves in the center of that. And there's so many different aspects of transformation, of course, but I've really, in this current period that's been really painful and jarring, you know, at the outset of this period that I have a sense is really going to shift, is in the process of shifting me. The emptiness has really been where I have been, and I've been in an inquiry around how to befriend that empty feeling.
Yeah, this is. I wonder if we've talked about this before on the podcast, but this whole concept of like the void, which this is how I think of like. Usually Pluto transits, you know, if I have a client who's coming in with some kind of Pluto transit, and maybe this is my snack, I don't know, but whatever.
Whatever.
You know, it's like, yeah, you're going to have to wait. Like part of this loss is being in the emptiness of the loss, you know, and these moments come up for all of us, and it's really hard to float there. And even if it's something that's transforming, that's something that you wanted to transform, you know, or something that you are looking forward to, or if it's a, you know, a rite of passage of some kind in your life that you're going through. I remember when I graduated high school and I was about to go to college, having this feeling of like, I don't know, like I just felt like empty. Like, I don't know what the new thing is going to be. Like, I knew where I was going, but I didn't know who the people would be, or like where I'd be living, or the city I'd be in. It was just like, I knew what I was leaving behind. And it felt so strange, especially at that age, because I don't think I'd had that specific type of transformation happen yet. So it was just like, I don't know. I just felt like I was literally floating in a void.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, one of the things I really wanted to talk about with transformation is the grief part of it, you know, like how with the change that's occurring, we have to let go of something, even if it's, you know, like for that example of me leaving high school, I was letting go of my friends and my routines and my home, you know, and like my family. It was a lot. It was a lot of things. I viewed it at the time as being really positive because I wanted to let go of those things. I wanted to move forward and go to college. But like, it was a loss, you know? And I think that acknowledging that in some way, that there is something that's being grieved or there is something that's being left behind, can help with the acceptance and the moving into the new phase.
Yeah. And I think it's like, you know, really, and, you know, when I was kind of excavating this topic this time, I had to look really at my orientation, you know, my narrative, because when we talk about something like change or, you know, big transformation, we all, you know, because of our wiring, because of our histories, all of it, have a story about what loss is in our lives. And, you know, in many ways, we're all learning how to lose because we're all hurtling toward the inevitable big one at the end, which is going to be, you know, the loss of this, you know, this vessel, this incarnation. And, you know, how can we learn to lose in a style that befits our shape and flavor and is both evolutionary and is also like easeful? Like, I've been thinking about that a lot. I think you and I talked maybe a few episodes ago on this podcast about, I don't know, I kind of feel like I'm always, I don't know, I'm a Plutonian kid. Like I'm like a Pluto Mars kid. And that has meant that my life, you know, it's like when Carl Jung says, like, a person's life is characteristic of that person. Not to say that you're like in charge or like it's a blame-based thing for external events that happen in your life, but my life has taken the shape of like some very Plutonian transformation, some real, you know, like we were talking about the head peeling off, or, you know, these externalized, like pretty dramatic losses, or these, you know, these big, big, you know, kind of epic walkabouts. And it's like, the older I get, I'm like, is there a way to be, I don't mean make it easier, but to be like in a softer posture around that. And, you know, maybe that's a specific Plutonian learning, you know, maybe somebody who's maybe oriented a little bit more toward Neptune. And, you know, I was thinking a lot about the outer planets when I was thinking about this. This isn't sort of my snack, but it's sort of my intro to my snack, because I think checking in first with sort of what our natural wiring is toward big change. And, you know, for me, it's sort of like the three far outer planets are kind of the gods or the whatever, the leaders of that learning how to lose. And I think each of us kind of orients more naturally toward one. And so that might be like Neptune, you know, you might be sort of a person who's Piscean or mutable or kind of, you know, maybe a little more comfortable with sort of just things sort of dissolving and kind of like a, you know, a shape-shifting quality and a not quite seeing. Maybe you're a Plutonian person, martial person who's really, you know, like fight it down, you know, burn it to the ground, rise up, like these heroic kind of antics, you know. Or maybe you're Uranian, mercurial person who's sort of like these flashes of change, these sudden about faces, you know, these kind of sweeping, clearing motions. And so I think it can be really interesting just as a exercise, you know, to just look and get a sense of your chart, you know, and it can shift, it can change. But, you know, if you're Aries or Scorpio dominant, it might be a Pluto Mars thing. You know, if you're really air dominant, could be Mercury Uranus, you know, could be Neptunian. I mean, just sort of feeling into these far outer planets in terms of an orientation can be interesting, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as an astrologer who works a lot with transits, these come in different forms and flavors throughout, you know, the moments of our lives. So if I'm more of a Plutonian person, but if I'm going through a Neptune transit, that can be an interesting thing. Because, you know, for me as a Plutonian person, I want to know, okay, this is the end. This is the beginning. Here's the big thing that's happening. You know, here's the big change that's occurring. But during a Neptune transit, you know, maybe like a Neptune square Saturn or something like that, it's going to, or Neptune, you know, it's like, it's going to be, okay, I don't know at all. Like, I just have to float here without knowing, and everything's foggy and super confusing, and I don't know what to choose. And I have to have faith and I have to have trust in myself. And that's what I have to encourage within myself, is this like bigger kind of love, unconditional love. Whoa.
Yeah. This is actually rocking my world right now, because I'm thinking, you know, I was just having a conversation with a really dear friend yesterday, you know, who has seen me through this kind of cycle. I'm coming to the end of a cycle in, you know, in sort of the dance of partnership, you know, with someone. And, you know, I was really in a space yesterday where I was like, why? Like, the kind of like, what is the meaning of this latest iteration of this? Mm. And I'm having a strong knowingness that this is like a behavioral pattern and a kind of, you know, heart space patterning that's being put down now for good. But I've been really kind of hung up the past few days on like, why this last round? Like, why again? And it's been interesting for me because I have such a knee-jerk reaction. I mean, I still feel all the fucking painful feelings of like, you know, loss and loss inside of transformation. But I have a very high capacity to inject things with meaning almost immediately mm-hmm. to see the symbolic. You know, it's a very fiery stellium kind of, you know, like mechanism where it's like, I see it. I see the meaning almost instantly in things. And I can't find the meaning in this one right now. Mm-hmm. Like I've been in that void space and, you know, I was talking to this friend who's like a Mars in Pisces, you know, and it really is. It feels like, and it's not, you know, it's not necessarily by transit in this moment, but I do think there's kind of a resonance with some things happening in my chart. And numerologically, I'm going through a 12 year, which is the Hanged One, which is Neptune ruled. And it's like, we all get schooled in all of these archetypes, all of these planetary energies at some point. And so when we've gone a little bit far in one direction, you know, astrology comes in, the archetypes come in to be like, okay, you know, this is going to be a different orientation. And what you're saying about like, you know, the Neptunian kind of feeling of, yeah, maybe this doesn't mean anything right now. Or maybe you can't see what that is. It's not that it's meaningless and your life is whatever, you're a speck that's born to die. But like there's meaning in the meaninglessness or in my reaching and trying to narrate this transformation right now, you know, and what lives underneath that, you know, and what kind of grief lives there too, you know?
Totally. And you know, these transformations, these grief processes, it's so delicate in how we want to like handle ourselves, you know, like we, you know, have to kind of really handle ourselves with kid gloves. And I think that like knowing where we need soothing and like what style of soothing is most helpful for us. And then giving ourselves that a little bit, you know, in a way that feels integrated and grounded can be really good. Like I was remembering when you were talking, I had like a big breakup when I was around 25 and it was my first like real breakup, real love. And it was my as a Libra moon, Libra sun, my instinct was like, I needed to be able to talk my way through it. Like I needed to have like reasons and like data for why this was happening. Not just like the bigger, it wasn't even about the bigger meaning of it. Like you're talking about, it was more about like, just like, what is this? What's happening? Who is involved? Why am I doing this? You know? And I had this idea to sell, I wasn't, yeah, I don't know how I would have done this at the time, but I wanted to make breakup flashcards that people could like buy and fill out, you know, like that you could have like these flashcards. And I made them for myself. I had like literally index cards that I wrote down, like, this is why you're breaking up.
Oh my God.
This is what the situation is. And I would like be going through my day. I'd take them out of my bag and I'd be like, okay, this is what's happening. Okay, put it back.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's
so funny. Maybe some transformation flashcards could be helpful, you know, for if you're very airy like I am and you need to talk yourself through some kind of big transformation.
Yeah. No, I've been thinking too. It's like harnessing those, you know, the Neptunian kind of the meaningless or the void space, but also like, you know, I'm very like associative. I'm not disassociative. I'm wired to go down and in. And so I'm like, oh, like what if I could kind of harness some of that Mercury or some of the Uranus right now, some of that like a slight detachment or a slight remove, you know, it's like I've had all these transformations where I've just been in the face first in the fucking shit. And it's like, you know, maybe the, that's going to be the tagline for this podcast.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's something about cultivating a little bit of space and like, that's scary too. And I don't know, these are just all questions like listeners, if you're just noticing, like checking in, like we all have kind of our default or our the place that we sort of go to in moments of big change and moments of big transformation. And just saying like, huh, I wonder if I could also like ally with some energies that maybe are less familiar to me in those moments, you know, because we want to go to the familiar. Obviously, we want comfort in moments of transformation and to hold ourselves together. But everything's changing in those moments. And like maybe our methodology changes a little bit too, you know?
Yeah. I just had a thought that, you know, you were talking earlier about like how to like learn to soften during transformation. And I don't know if this is connected to that thought, maybe, but like we're always going through a transformation. You know, like there's always something transforming in us, even if it is on a cellular level, even if it is our cells dying off and new ones growing, you know. So I think at Scorpio season, if you're listening to this, you know, like right after we're releasing it, it could be interesting to kind of just do a little transformation inventory. Like, where am I transforming? One of my favorite questions for this is like, what do I need to see that I'm not seeing? Or, you know, question. If you're a visual person, or what do I need to know that I'm not knowing, or what do I need to hear that I'm not hearing,
you know,
or feel that I'm not feeling. That's the best one. Yeah. Just to like, kind of like poke around and be like, what is going on right now? I can't remember if I already talked about this on the podcast, but like my friend recently, a couple months ago, called me and she was like, hey, just went to an astrologer and like she told me that the next 3 years are going to be really hard. And she's like, I'm so annoyed because every time I talk to an astrologer, I feel like they say that, like that there's like, you know, that it's
welcome
like
to life.
Next- yeah. Yeah. Well, that was the thing is I was like listening to her. I was like, holy cow. Like I wasn't the astrologer she had gone to, but I was like, I think I do that too as an astrologer. Like I think, and listening to her, I was like, you know, maybe that's kind of a downside of this art form we're practicing here, is that the tendency maybe, and I'm just trying, you know, I'm generalizing big time, but maybe the tendency is like for astrologers to look in the chart and in the transits for like the big transformations that are happening or the big hard things that are happening, and to kind of share those in a reading, you know, if someone's coming in for a year ahead or, you know, an update on what's going on. It's like, oh, here's the big places that are going to be, you're going to be working on, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead. No,
I was thinking like, and it's a slightly different orientation toward this, but like alongside that, if somebody comes in or if we're like starting from the premise when we're looking at our charts that we're always changing, okay, that's just a given.
Right.
So we don't need to like startle ourselves into like, obviously if someone's coming in or we're reflecting on our own thing, we know this, like this is particularly epic, you know, we can kind of get into the whatever there. But like, if we're going from the premise that we're always changing, we can always use the chart to summon who the allies are in that moment. And it's like, who wants to come forward? Is it a Taurus energy? Is it Mars? Is it, you know, and then we sort of see the landscape of the chart as like, oh, I'm just going to lift this out to be like your buddy, basically your like your school buddy to hold your hand, you know, to hold on to while you walk through this. That's always happening.
Yeah, totally. Since that phone call, I've kind of changed my approach to how I talk about the transits. I usually will say something, you know, like, hey, here's the deal with life, is that we are always going through a big change and transformation. And if you're looking at the orbits of the outer planets, odds are really high that they're going to be affecting, you know, they're going to be creating some change at any given time.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be talking about that, but know that this is like, this is not, it's not shocking what's happening here. Like, this is just part of it. And so we're looking at like, you know, you said it so artfully and beautifully, the way you're talking about the archetypes and the friends who can hold your hands. I love that. You know, it's like, who's, what's the style? What's the flavor? What's happening here that we, that having that understanding of the kind of weather pattern that you're working with can help you just work with what is coming up now.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So you ready to get snacking?
Let's get snacking.
So yeah, I think that's a good entry point into my my first snack, my astro snack. This idea of sort of accompanying, like who can accompany us in the chart in this journey, and the place that I got to was the inconjunct or the quincunx signs, and I'll explain a little bit what I mean by this. So I think it can be really interesting. I mean, the different levels, but if you're just sort of starting out, I mean, you can go wild with this, you know, this tool if you want to. But I think for starters, looking at your sun and or moon, the moon could even be a little bit maybe more compelling in this conversation with transformation, because the moon is both you know, our moon sign is both what we're sort of seeking to stabilize and the inevitable flux and the inevitable changing faces of us. So looking at the two signs that are in conjunct, also known as quincunx, to your sun sign or your moon sign. And I'll break that down a little bit more. So there are astrologers who look at what we call aspects, and those are just those telephone lines that run through the center of the chart that describe how different planets in different signs are speaking to one another. You know, a lot of astrologers will look at those by degree. So you'll sometimes get, and if you have no idea what I'm talking about, don't even worry and just like gloss over this part. But for the purposes of this conversation, I'm going to be talking to that aspect by sign. So each sign has two other signs out of the 12 that are in inconjunct aspect to that sign. And if you're just starting out, you can just find these signs simply by looking at the sign that's opposite the sign and looking at the two signs on other sides. So I'll just give I'll give Aries as an example. So Aries is opposite Libra. You know, there's six pairs of signs, Aries and Libra, Taurus and Scorpio, Gem and Sag, Cancer and Capricorn, Leo and Aquarius, and Virgo and Pisces. And then to find the two signs that are in conjunct to our sign, it's just the ones that are on either side, quote unquote, of the opposition. So if Aries is in opposition to Libra, the two signs that are one before Libra and one after are Virgo and Scorpio. So Aries would be in conjunct, an in conjunct relationship to Virgo and Scorpio. And, you know, each of the aspects has a different, like, yeah, it's just like little frenzies partnering up and like, what is their deal? You know, when we have a trine, there might be a sense of sort of just falling naturally into a support. These are signs that are in the same element together. You know, when we have something like a square, there's a sort of sense of constructedness. You know, these are signs that have similar modality, cardinal, fixed, mutable, but they're in different, you know, elements. And when we get to the inconjunct, we're sort of the farthest from home in some ways, because we're in relationship to two signs that are both a differing modality to us. In this case, in the example of Aries, Aries is cardinal fire, and then Virgo is mutable earth, and Scorpio is fixed water. So both a differing modality and also a differing element that's not, maybe doesn't come as sort of naturally to us. And so for me, the inconjuncts, it's kind of a personal obsession of mine. I feel like these relationships, but they're the signs that maybe we feel like we can kind of understand the least on some level, but they also have this like secret kind of treasure, where we have to kind of stop understanding and accept and kind of just like get on board, like with the signs energy, make sort of like a leap of faith in our consciousness around conceptualizing how we could even take the properties of this sign on. And I think for that reason, they're really interesting allies in the process of transformation, because in the process of transformation, we don't really know, you know, it's that void space or that emptiness in the middle. We don't know what the new apparatus is going to be, or we're learning to lose in order to refine something that we don't yet know the shape of what it is. And so somehow kind of coming into relationship with the inconceivable, quote unquote, I think can be, it can just start to be like a little playful exercise to think, okay, my sun's in, you know, Aries, or my moon's in Aries, or, you know, whatever you want to play with your sun or your moon sign. And you could even sort of orient yourself to different, to one of those two signs in different moments of change. You know, maybe you're feeling really solar in the change. You're really ready for that individual sort of expressive reorientation. Or maybe you're just like, damn, I just need some sustenance. I need to feel like emotionally supported in this moment. Maybe that's more an orientation toward checking in with your moon sign. And then just being like, okay, not like what would Virgo and Scorpio do, but like if I could imagine walking through this fire or walking through this void space or this process of big change, if I had Virgo on one side of me and I had Scorpio on the other side of me, like what would that look like? Like if we sort of crossed the floor together. And, you know, it's kind of like a funny, you know, I'll just sort of play it out in my own mind to give an example of it. You know, for me as a strongly Aries person, okay, Virgo would maybe usher me into kind of taking the shape of things a little more into that supplication that we talked about on the devotion issue. You know, Scorpio might, it might create a little bit more of a boundary to kind of container around that transformation. It might, it might get into that space, you know, we talked in the beginning about that Plutonian, you know, that Plutonian vibe, but it might also remind me of like, what's eternal in the situation? You know, what is going to be like, what can I carry my way through the fire and still have on the other side of it? You know, and it's just, I mean, it's just like, I know it can feel like a little bit like, huh, okay, how do I, you know, but I don't know, maybe we can workshop it a little bit for you, Sandy, thinking about, you know, having a Libra sun and a Libra moon, you know, the two in conjuncts for you would be on the other side of Aries. So they would be Pisces and Taurus, you know, and mm-hmm. what, you know, what that might look like for you in a moment of change to kind of link arms with those two little buddies.
Yeah. It's funny as you were talking, I was thinking about Pisces and Taurus and like my totally Libra reaction to thinking about these in conjunct signs is like, but I'm always friends with Pisces and Taurus. I love Pisces and Taurus. There's pure harmony between me right. and Pisces and Taurus.
Always, all the signs.
Always. The signs. Yeah. I love yeah. them all. So funny. Yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Like even thinking about something, you know, with the hypnosis I want to offer, it's like for me, part of moving through change is like holding on and grasping on to this, like this pure faith, you know, this like kind of like faith in like, I can't even describe it. Yet we start to get into the wordlessness of Pisces, which is like that it is all what it is, you know, that like everything matters and nothing matters all at once. And that we just have to flow and just be and trust in ourselves and trust in what we've created within ourselves and trust in the spirit of what we are and what the universe is, that it is just what it is. And there's nothing to do, you know, because like even Libra as a cardinal sign is like, well, what should I start? What should I begin? What is the new thing I need to create? And with Pisces is like, there's nothing, you know,
yeah.
there's nothing to do. You could just be here. You can let yourself feel what feelings are coming up, you know? And then there's the downside of Pisces as well, which I've definitely dealt with as a Libra in times of transformation, which is let me cover it up. You let me cover up all the feelings with the compulsion and some reaching for something, you know, how can I, you know, like grab something that's going to make me feel better right now. Mm-hmm. And that's been a big learning curve for me. And maybe the answer to that is the physicality of Taurus,
yeah.
where it's like, well, if I'm in my body and I'm feeling in my body, it makes it harder for me to reach out for something to cover up because I'm just allowing, you know, for example, with disordered eating in my past, would be like, well, I'll reach for some food to cover up this feeling. And when I'm really in my, you know, body, and this is what I think of when I think of Taurus, really feeling like, am I actually hungry? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not really. Let me just feel what I feel in my body. And then if I still want to eat something, I can eat it, but we're knowing that it's more of an emotional thing that's happening, you know, and kind mm-hmm. of slowing down enough to think that through, to me, feels very Taurus. Yeah, and to think more about Taurus and like, the with Libra and Taurus are both ruled by Venus. So there's already is a commonality in that in conjunction, which doesn't always happen, where you're finding like, we do have something in common. And the thing that we have in common is the senses and the beauty of the world. And like being in the moment to see that beauty. You know, I think sometimes Libra can get all up in the head and be like, well, I have to think of this thing and think of that thing and the concepts and the ideals. And it's like, why don't I just look at this tree?
yeah.
You know, why don't I just sit here and look at what's right in front of me? Like, oh, this fabric does feel good in my body. Like actually in this very moment, you know, Eckhart Tolle, I believe, talks about like just being in the now, right? Well, obviously, I mean, I think a lot of that's probably common knowledge for our listeners. The, you know, Eckhart Tolle has the book, The Power of Now. And it's like, everything is kind of in this moment right now. You're alive, you know, and you're here. So that feels very Taurus to me.
Yeah, that kind of immediacy. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I even think, and I've been in this current process of transformation, I've really been allying, or seeking, I should say, to ally myself, you know, with the in conjunct little buddies on either side of my moon, my Leo moon, and that would be Capricorn and Pisces, which, oof, you know, like those two are really, and I think it could be interesting, you know, if you have moon and sun signs in different, you know, in different signs, I think in some ways, I don't know that this is always the case, but the moon sign, our moon sign, can maybe feel even more, there's a natural sort of like, there's a natural growth orientation with the sun, a kind of reaching, a kind of like desire for change or a becomingness, I think. And with our moon sign, maybe in some people, there's a more protected sense of like, I gotta keep this sort of core part of myself. So it can perhaps be more activating to look at the in conjuncts around your moon sign. At least it is for me, you know, but looking at Capricorn, you know, that kind of, the container, creating the no, creating the sort of yes and no, all of that, you know, in this particular situation has been very activating. And then the Pisces Neptunian, you know, who knows, likeness of it all has been very activating as well, you know. But, you know, it's just, it's also just like a way to start to, I think, just even outside of this confirmation of transformation, conversation about transformation, a way to start playing, you know, if you're a newer to looking at your chart, and even if you're seasoned, I mean, we can play all day. It's like pull a couple signs out of a hat. And I think it's really nice to pull out like three sometimes because you really like, you get a kind of dynamism with that grouping and just play. Mm-hmm. Like, what are these guys, what are they up to? If they're at like the party of life, like what's going on between these three, you know, and it can really help you, I think, as a reader, you know, either of your own chart or other people's charts to just really play in that way. So once you kind of dip into a chart, you're like, because the possibilities are infinite. You know, we could talk about Libra, Taurus, and Pisces all day long and have all sorts of points of coincidence, points of divergence, points of growth orientation. And so, yeah, I think we're, I mean, it's maybe silly to say or a little simple, but, you know, we're all here to learn about all of the signs and planets' energy. And so, you know, in moments of transformation, it can be, I think, really a reorientation to the remembrance that this chart is like full of resources, full of these little buddies, and like pick out your like who's going to take you to the bathroom. I don't know why I'm thinking about that, but like walk you across the, you know, whatever, you know, kind of be your little arm linker in this moment.
I really love that perspective. It's not one I ever would have thought of. And I love the idea of reaching out for a different type of energy to kind of lean on, you know, and you can do that. Maybe I'm just thinking about it. Like you can actually probably do that through different friends that you have, you know. It might be interesting to like, be like, okay, if it's Capricorn is the kind of energy I want to call in, who do I know who's the most Saturnian Capricorn, you know? Yeah. What do they think about what's going on?
Yeah.
And I've talked to them.
Interestingly, I've called in this current situation a lot on two of my really close friends who are both Capricorn moons. So really? I didn't even think about that until now, but I've like naturally sort of like constellated my in conjunct experience to my Leo moon because I've known that there was some, or my soul has known that there was some type of medicine, and that what I needed was somebody who was going to be a little bit no nonsense about this situation, was going to be like, it's over, it's ended, you know, like a fierceness to that, you know? So
that's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That energy, you know, and we do it naturally. We do it without really thinking about it. It's so funny when I look at, you know, relationship charts, I'm like, oh yeah, you guys are pulling these two different energies together to give yourself something. The in conjuncts and relationship charts are really fun to look at too. You know, I find them, again, this is very Libran, but I find, you know, my husband has a Pisces moon and I just love, you know, of course, it really doesn't work at moments where he's like, I'm going to go disappear. And I'm like, the only thing I want to do is talk about this.
Yeah. You know?
But I just love that energy that he brings to so many, you know, topics and experiences that I don't have so naturally. I mean, I do have, I am Neptune rising and I have Pisces, you know, things I can tap into in myself, but it's really fun. You know, those are the signs, these in conjuncts, if you're reading in like a classic astrology and astrology books that I've written have this in it, it's like, oh, these are the people you don't get along with that well, you know, but it doesn't, you know, it's like, that's kind of, we're always looking for, you know, in a popular astrology blog, they're going to be like, here are your best friends, you know, Gemini, these are your best friends and these are your enemies. And the enemies are often going to be like the inconjuncts. Right. You know, but really there are things that's just, it's just too generalized and it's not really accurate. We don't buy it.
Yeah, we don't
buy it. Even though I have written it in books, but you
but
know.
No more. We're not buying it, and so you shouldn't either.
It can be helpful though too. Like it helps me understand with my husband and the Pisces moon, it helps me understand where we don't work together, you know, and to understand like, okay, he needs this in an emotional moment and I need this. I conceptually understand that. So it helps me give him the space that he needs. It helps me ask for what I need. You know, it is really helpful to look at how it doesn't work as well. Now I'm on a tangent.
and we're gonna move on. Don't worry, listeners. We're not gonna spend our entire episode talking about inconjuncts. But I do want to say that, like, I think the flavor of an inconjunct feels a little bit to me like Chiron sometimes, in the sense that an inconjunct asks for our acceptance, even if we don't understand. And I think that that's like in so many ways that is like. Could sum up transformation. It asks for our acceptance even if we don't understand, you know, when we're in it, you know.
Because Chiron was one of my snack package, my past hors d'oeuvres I wanted to talk about. So that's a great lead-in. Chiron is the wounded healer. So Chiron's going to pop up in moments when we're like, oh, okay, here's this old thing that might be totally unconscious that's coming up again and is asking me to kind of like face it and feel it. And it's feeling really deep and it's feeling really personal. And, you know, maybe even there's some ego in it. Actually, I never thought about this before with Chiron and ego. Let's workshop that one. But maybe it's like, oh, I'm feeling really hurt by this situation. This is a deep pain. And I don't know why I'm so being tested by this thing that's coming up. And the acceptance part of the Chiron healing is to be like, really to first of all, tend to that wound and to love upon it and give yourself, you know, a lot of care and attention. And to also, you know, like get past the ego side of it maybe and to kind of like accept, as you're talking about, just accept what is there. I never thought about that before with Chiron. The thing with, you know, with what I wanted to talk about with transformation is Chiron, Saturn, and Pluto. Because when I'm doing readings, these are the planets I tend to zero in on the most when people are going through really transformative experiences. And similarly to what we were talking about at the beginning with Uranus and Neptune and Pluto, you know, we're just looking at the different types of flavors of transformation. And as we had already kind of covered, transformation is always happening in one way or another. So what's the style of it? Chiron's style is kind of like, this is going to feel really deep. And you are going to have to move through those emotions in their own time. And just, you know, I know that you and I have a slightly different view of Chiron. I do think that there's something with Chiron that can be learned because in my own... And maybe it's like my own chart, you know, my own experience of when there's been like a Chiron transit. For example, I had Chiron opposite Venus when I was in my late, I guess, early 30s. And that I just remember, or late 20s, I don't remember, but I remember having this first Chiron Venus opposition and being like, whoa, relationships are really hard. And being like, oh, I wonder if anybody's ever written a book about relationships. Like, and I went to the bookstore and I was like, oh, there's a whole section. Oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, I had no idea. And like, I got a bunch of books about relationships. And I was like, oh, right. People know how to do this. Okay. Let me see what I can learn here. And it, that Chiron transit for me helped me like, yeah, it would come up, like situations would come up surprisingly and really hit me in my core. And for me, that core wound that was getting hit was like, I'm always alone. You know, that was the core wound that kept getting sparked with that Chiron opposition Venus. And, but I felt like I could gain tools at the same time to work with that. So for me, it felt functional. Mm-hmm. I know for you, Bess, it's like...
Yeah, mine has not felt very functional. No, I don't know if it's not felt functional. Maybe it's time to revisit that. But yeah, I have Chiron in like a T-square with my moon and my Lilith and like to the degree. And I think there's just been so much, I don't know, it's a very lunar experience, I think, where it's just like this raw Inquit, very primal, very Lilithized also like experience that just like, you know, like whatever. And it's, you know, we all have different orientations toward, you know, when we get sort of activated in those big emotional ways. But I think for me, the only thing has been, it's not that there isn't a learned aspect to it, but maybe I've learned that there isn't like the healing around it is the kind of getting rocked and rolled in the physicalized experience of it without efforting in the way that I would think of as normal efforting. Maybe there's work and there's learning that's happening, but it's like just getting kind of rocked and rolled around, you know, almost like sort of like thrown down a chute and like kind of bumped up. And you know, you and I both have Chiron and Taurus, but it's almost been like a very physicalized sort of taurine experience of like letting that live. And so I think that's because it's been such a primal one for me. Maybe it's why, and obviously I've, you know, looked at thousands of other people's charts. It's not just my experience of Chiron, but I do have this sense, I think when I always partner in my mind with Saturn, that Saturn is a little bit more in my mind, like a conscious application of effort. And it's something that we can like, not that we can't get better, quote unquote, with our Chiron, but like that's not really the deal. Like the deal isn't as much to like fix as it is to, you know, or in the same way. I don't know if that all makes sense.
I get that. But. Yeah. You know, it's like with Saturn, which is my next past hors d'oeuvre here, you know, it's like there is a functionality that's really, I always feel like there's really a program. Saturn is the kind of transformation that's like, okay, I'm transforming because I'm getting my master's degree, or I'm getting like my undergraduate degree, or I'm getting my high school diploma. Like I'm transforming because there's something I need to learn, and that learning process is going to help me become, you know, different in a bunch of different ways. Of course, there'll be the information side of it, but maybe also like the self-confidence I have and the foundation I've created within myself. You know, Saturn, my biggest transformational moments have been like the Saturn transits that have been like, okay, time's up.
Yeah. Like,
you don't get to do this anymore. You get time's to pick up a different path and you have to go down that one. Or you could fester here for a lot longer, but the whole feeling of it's going to really change. And it's going to start to feel like it's festering, and it's not just, you know, you've been doing this for a while and now you got to figure out a different thing, or just sit in the pain of it if you don't want to.
Yeah. That time's up where you like, and also like the reaching for the thing, but like the thrill is gone. That could take a lot of different shapes, but like we've all been in those moments where it's like, okay, time's up. Okay. I can continue to sort of ghost my way through the as if of performing the same motion in this situation, but it's done. It's done.
It's done. It's not going to have that same appeal in some way. You know too much now.
Oh, God. I feel that Saturn right now, that in conjunct Capricorn. I know too much.
You can't unknow what you know. That for me, and I know it's not what we're talking about right now, but sometimes I'm really reassured by that kind of this idea of like, sometimes I feel like, oh, I learned this thing. What if I unlearn it and I end up in the same pattern again? And I remember having that thought and my therapist being like, no, you already have the awareness. Like you can't unhave it. Like like you have the awareness. It doesn't go away now.
Yeah.
And that was really reassuring for me of like, oh, right, the transformation is happening and it's conscious on a conscious level now. So like, I can't undo it. Yeah, I can act it out again. I can go do the same thing again, but it's not going to feel the same. Like, because I know too much.
Yeah, I like what you're saying too. And, you know, not to get too deeply into the comparison between Chiron and Saturn, but when you're saying time's up for Saturn, and then you're describing Chiron as moving through in your own time, there is that kind of idea of time and timelessness. And I think that's like speaks to a slightly different orientation. Not that we have to be aggressive about Saturn or Saturn transits, but there is a certain like, boop, you know, like no more, you know, whereas with Chiron, it moves and she moves in mysterious ways. Not that it's a she, but, you know, like, I don't know why I'm thinking about Bono.
It makes me think about something else that I'm curious about. Like I have, in the Saturn transits I've experienced, it's like everything that's changing is right in front of my face and I can't ignore it. And this is maybe me personally. But then in the Chiron transits, I don't always know what it is that's happening.
Right.
It's not as obvious. Like, and I'm wondering about this because I was just looking at my own transits and I have Chiron opposite my moon right now, which if I was looking at someone else's chart, I'd be like, mayday, mayday. This is happening. You need to know.
Oh my God.
But I, you know, I'm not really getting what it's all about at this moment. And I'm sure, you know, Chiron transits can last a long time. So I'm sure I'll have an opportunity to figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's interesting. On one hand, you know, this makes me think of the ego again. Like I am having a baby and like there's a lot of change and transformation happening. And there's a lot of loss of the old self and like creation of a new thing. But I'm not feeling it emotionally yet. Let's see how this goes, though.
Follow up in a few months.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling a lot of emotions. So anyway, this isn't a self-therapy session for Sandy, so let's keep going.
No, let's rebrand the whole podcast as therapy for Sandy and Beth. all right, so I want to hear about Pluto.
So Pluto. We kind of talked about it already because the big thing I want to talk about with Pluto is the void, you know, that we had covered. So I don't have to cover that now. But Pluto is the modern ruler of Scorpio. And we could talk a bit about Scorpio here and how what we're doing with the Scorpio-Pluto energy is that we're really seeing all of the times in our lives where we come to the end of a cycle and we have to let something die away so that something new can be born. And this is the big, you know, phoenix rising out of the ashes kind of energy of Scorpio. We had touched on this earlier, but, you know, I have read and I wanted to kind of talk about just a little bit more with you, Bess, of like, you know, seeing when I see a chart of someone who has like a lot of Scorpio. Usually it's like a lot of Scorpio, maybe a really strong Pluto, like a Pluto rising or something like that. I'll usually tell them, you know, okay, you have like, you're the type of person where you're really drawn toward like growth and change and transformation. And when you create those scenarios for yourself, it's like, you want to go all the way in. Like you want to feel as if when you come out on the other side, like something has really changed. Like that's a satisfying life experience for you to feel as if you can look at the past and where you are now and be like, wow, that I grew and I see how and I know how. Would you say that that like resonates for you as well as an astrologer talking about Scorpio?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is one of these points of conversation where I'm just like really in it. Like I've really, you know, so sometimes I project, you know, we all do it, whatever we, you know, based on our own kind of inclinations and wiring. But, you know, as a person with Pluto rising from the 12th, you know, opposite all that shit, you know, who's been very identified with Plutonian experiences, I think the thing about Pluto that, you know, as I've grown older and just maybe just been worn down by the intense, like I hit a point in my early 30s, like just after my Saturn return, where I had sort of made peace with that intensity and like letting that intensity live, and like that identification that I've seen in people's charts that have heavy Scorpio, heavy Pluto, you know, where there's a certain peacemaking, there's a certain like forgiving the self for its feralness, for its attraction to feralness and attraction to friction. Because I think what can happen with like Pluto strong people or, you know, Scorpionic people is that there's a kind of process where just inevitably for a while, like we push that away, or we say like, oh, that's coming from the outside, or there's a kind of like almost forced disownership that sometimes happens in that. And there's a lot of overcultural reasons, I think, for that. But what I've often seen in clients and in myself, like, is this kind of like recovery of that. And then it's like, okay, I mean, even though we can't like really consciously wield, I don't think, at least the outer planets, like, what would it mean to like live a life in partnership with Pluto and like slightly more conscious partnership? And I think that's where I've really started to see, I don't want to say the softer side of Scorpio and Pluto, but like just the gradient, you know? And it's like, okay, if there's going to be these situations of sort of like go all the way in, it's not like, okay, I'm going to reorient the client or reorient myself to like not go all the way in, but like, what is the shape of the energy body as I'm like walking through this? Like, what are the tendings? What are the resources? What is the sort of container? It's almost like how do we sort of outfit that person a little bit, so it's not like my skin is getting ripped off of my entire body every time. And for some people, maybe that's exactly what the journey is, like that kind of like high level of, you know, like, but it's just, I think it's like orienting toward a feeling of like where there's a slight at choiceness, even though I don't really feel like Pluto and the outer planets are necessarily about choice. Like there is a slight, maybe choosing of like a slight modification of the posture as we like move through that primal experience. At least that's where I am right now in kind of my orientation.
Yeah.
Personally.
That's so well said. And that has to I'm assuming that this is like a practice, right? That this is like, you can't, you know, as a 15-year-old, it'd be really hard to get that subtlety, you know, unless you had like really great support going on and like had learned to be super self-aware and, you know.
Yeah. I'm just having like acid flashbacks to my Pluto 15-year-old self.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Not, I mean, most likely. There, I wanted to mention this book called Broken Open. Have you ever read it or heard of it?
No.
By Elizabeth Lesser. And I read it when I was going through my, right after my Saturn return. I had a lot of Saturn transits and some Pluto as well. And it was like, really hit home for me as a helping guide for how to move through this kind of big change. And she calls these big moments of change, I think it's something like a Phoenix experience or Phoenix rising experience. And she talks about how she believes that like all of us have like three big ones in our lives, maybe give or take. But there's like all of us have like these big opportunities to walk into the fire and to really kind of like burn up the past and then like kind of step into a new thing. And the way she describes that is like really gentle. I like her writing style a lot. So I think it's a nice book if you're going through one of these big transformations and you're listening to the podcast because you're like, oh, what is this? It might be a nice book to read.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be a good, and to present something at like the other end of the polarity, perhaps. It's like, do you want to go like primal, whatever, do you want to have sort of a more gentle accompaniment? Or, you know, I think about the book and now I can't remember I think it's an anthropologist who writes this book, or no, maybe like a myth. I don't know. She's a studier of myths. I think it's a book from the 70s, called Descent to the Goddess by, I'm totally blanking on the name, but it tells like the myth of, Inanna and Ereshkigal, which are, I think, Sumerian goddesses. And, it's basically the story of Libra and Scorpio. And it's the story of Inanna kind of like descending to the realm of Ereshkigal and the Scorpionic realm. And I don't know. So yeah, there's a lot of like, yeah. And it's like, I think that all speaks to also like aligning ourselves with the story, and not that we can always excavate meaning in these moments of transformation. And sometimes it's not about the meaning. Sometimes it's about letting ourselves sort of lose that sense for a moment. But, you know, like, the framing of this can be important, I think, you know, because we like, this is like the vitality and the very like meat of our lives, like how we're being worked on by the universe, how we're being available to go through this journey and to come out, to be different at the end. I mean, that sounds super banal, but like we're here to learn about our own difference, you know, and to be able to let ourselves be changed by this experience we're going through. Otherwise, what the hell, you know, like we're, mm-hmm. the stasis is impossible. So providing some sort of storyline can be, I think, quite soothing, you know, in certain yeah. cases, or some mythological backdrop.
Yeah. How's the
tarot time?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're really, when Sandy and I first set out to record, we were like, I don't know. For some reason, I'm feeling like this topic, I don't know. Maybe we'll just talk about it for like 5 minutes and it'll be over. That's, I don't know why we thought that, but you know,
well,
now
that's
we're shaping
what I
up.
Thought. I was like, yeah, I don't have a whole lot to say. We do this yeah. every time though.
Turns out we do. Turns out we do.
Turns out we can talk forever.
Yeah. So in the interest of just keeping this fairly, fairly cogent, I don't know why I keep using the word cogent. That might not even be the right word for this situation. But yeah, for the interest in keeping things vital and bite-sized, I'm going to not compress the tarot snack, but give it in its raw immediacy in the way that feels poppable. And at first, I was really thinking that my snack was going to be the fours of the tarot. You know, I was really thinking about the fours as these kind of pillow forts, as these ways to sort of stabilize ourselves amidst flux of transformation. And then I was really aware that I think the fours are what I need right now, like very intensely, but I don't know that that's like collectively always the invitation for moments of change. So the thing that really came through for me was the numerological experience of the minor arcana. And this is the cards that are numbered, well, ace is sort of de facto one and then numbered through 10. And I think each of the numbers, and they go across all four suits, you know, the wands, the swords, the cups, and the pentacles. But each of these numbers have a different offering, I think, in terms of like being an ally or being a resource during a moment of transformation. And so, you know, I'm just going to kind of run down the list from ace to 10 and a little bit about what that allyship might look like in moments of transformation. And then whatever you're feeling, I think you can go to your deck and you can pull out, you know, you can pull out, you know, your aces, your twos, your threes, whatever sounds resonant to you, you can pull those four from that category, or you can just pull out your whole minor arcana and, you know, lift one of those cards out and see what number it is and be kind of interested about that number in the midst of transformation. So the ace, I really see vis-a-vis transformation as the kind of spark of the inconceivable. It's that little dot on the horizon that we don't yet know. We don't quite yet know, but maybe we're getting a sense that this is something, you know, that there's something kind of coming on the other side of this. And the ace helps keep us oriented toward, you know, it kind of keeps hope alive. The twos, you know, I don't always see the twos as cards of choice necessarily, but I think there is a kind of choice offering in the twos in relationship to transformation. Like, where could you maybe choose to orient yourself a little differently in this situation? You know, where is there an opportunity to show up to this period of change with a little bit of a different resourcing? The threes are really speaking to the suppleness in the midst of transformation, really where we're being asked to kind of dilate, flower open, let ourselves be flooded with this feeling of flux. The fours are the steadiness, this kind of pillow fort, this kind of like holding ourselves in the center of that storm. The fives to me are really what's at stake in the transformation. It's what we're learning to kind of bounce around and bump up against and make our own through this process. Like really like the story that nobody else could live except for us. And sometimes that has to be a little bit confronting perhaps. The sixes are really the sense of renewal, the sense of like learning to love and live again on the other side of something. The sevens are really, I think, speak to this relationship between the internal and the external. They can be great allies in moments where we might feel like change is being done to us from the outside. And maybe we're seeking to kind of center a little bit more in our relationship to external forces. And the eight's really a kind of sloughing off, a slipping away, this infinity loop of the eight that kind of swirls, the snake swirl of just like, woof, you know, kind of shake it off. All right. We're sort of shimmying out of this one moment of our lives and into another. The nines really speak to me of like a private relationship with change, a kind of interior shift and interiority, being able to be in a kind of a solitudinous relationship with that shift. And then the tens really speaking to like what's full up in our lives, what we've mastered, what we've kind of reached the end of, and a kind of celebratory perhaps orientation toward that as well. So can be fun, you know, either pulling out all these cards and just seeing what the number of the card is that you get out of the minors, or really actively working, orienting yourself toward one of these categories of cards can be cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's like just like it's almost like a little timeline in and of itself to be like, oh, I'm mm-hmm. here.
Yeah, totally.
Or what will it feel like when I'm here? For the hypnosis, I want to offer like a self-hypnosis practice. I won't walk you through it, but you can do it on your own, taking notes now. And first, you always want to start with a way to relax. So there, you know, could be many ways to relax. I was thinking about this before and thinking if you're in a big moment of transformation where there's a lot of emotions coming up and you're kind of, whoa, on edge, if that's where you're living right now, it could be really helpful to just do breathing exercises for a while, you know, maybe set a timer for 10 minutes and just breathe. And as you breathe, try to just extend your exhale a little bit longer than your inhale. So you could count, you know, in for three and out for six, or in for four and out for six or seven or whatever you want. But just knowing that you're extending that exhale longer is a great way to help your body stop releasing like the more kind of intense hormones and to start to kind of relax the nervous system. So you could start with that if you need to. And if that's not where you're at, if you're kind of like, oh, I'm pretty calm, easy breezy, just starting with like kind of taking a nice couple of deep breaths and looking, keeping your head in like a relaxed, neutral position. So your head and neck are in a neutral position, but just lifting up your gaze. So you're just looking up above you, and maybe finding a spot on the wall up above you that you're looking at, and counting yourself down 3, 2, 1, and closing your eyes down. And then doing that 3 or 4 more times. So opening your eyes up and looking up above, and then counting down 3, 2, 1, down and closing them down. Doing that 3 or 4 or 5 times, taking a nice deep breath, relaxing your body. That's really all you need to do to get yourself into a nice relaxed state. The eyes lifting up and then closing down, it's kind of like you're saying to your subconscious mind, it's okay to go down, to rest, to relax. So once you're relaxed, you know, the first thing that I think would be really helpful is to kind of call on the supportive presences around you and in your life. And maybe these are these archetypes of the in conjunct signs that we had discussed earlier. You're calling these energies forward. Maybe it's your ancestors, your friends, your loved ones. Maybe it's your higher self or your inner sense of stability or an angelic presence, but just call on whatever supportive presences that you want to call on to surround you, to help you feel supported, to help you feel taken care of, safe, hopeful, accepting, serene. And you can just spend some time here, you know, with these very supportive, helpful, loving energies. And as you're here with these supportive energies, you can imagine yourself floating, and you're floating in a way that feels really comforting for you. So earlier we were talking about the void and how sometimes it can feel as if you're floating in this spacelessness and that it's like, where am I going next? And instead of that, this floating that you're doing here, might be really padded. Maybe there's a cloud underneath your feet, and like maybe there's different soft colors of light filling the air all around you, or vibrant colors of light, depending on what you enjoy. And you're still with these supportive presences, and maybe you're standing on like a really grassy field, and you're kind of floating on these like beautiful, lush grasses surrounded by clouds and perfect temperature of air and beautiful light and beautiful sounds. And so you can just imagine yourself there for a while. And then when you're ready, you can see a castle somewhere nearby that you can walk into and open the door and find a control room of your mind here. Maybe there's many panels with different knobs and buttons. And the button that grabs your attention is the one that says acceptance. And you can go over to that button, that dial, and you can just turn it up, turn it all the way up. And as you turn up this acceptance in your mind, acceptance is ready for you at the highest level. And another dial grabs your attention, and this one says hope. And you can turn that dial way up just so that's all ready for you to step into that feeling that is already created within your mind. You can come back to this control room at any time to make any adjustments you desire. And now your future self steps forward. And this future self is so filled with joy and acceptance. And this future self is loving and calm and serene. I'm ready to show you all the changes and transformations that you've created. And you can enjoy spending time with your future self, gaining understanding, seeing the new experiences that are existing. And the joy and acceptance that is radiating within you now. And when you're ready, you can just open your eyes and be right here and now, knowing that you're always surrounded by those supportive presences filled with joy and acceptance. Yeah.
I gotta spend some serious time in that control room, baby.
Yeah.
Gotta turn that acceptance knob up. Not there yet, but yeah, with some repeated practice.
Slowly. And if there's other, you know, I didn't want to say this in the hypnosis part because it's very personal, but you know, if I was working with someone one-on-one, we could talk about this, but like, depending on where you're at in your life, maybe there's a dial that you want to turn down a little bit as well. You know, something that resonates for you right now, something that is challenging you. And then there's other dials you might want to turn up. So you can really play with that control room and just identify, you know, do you want more meaning and understanding? Maybe there's a dial of understanding you want to turn up. Or is it a dial of despair that you just need a little buffer around? You just want to turn that down a bit, you know? Not that we're trying to avoid any challenging feelings. That's not really the point. But you can give yourself a little soothing buffer here with this exercise.
The dial of despair. Well, listeners, thanks for joining us in this journey to learn how to lose, to navigate the void, to find our stable center in the midst of all of these shimmies. We hope that wherever you are and whatever changes you're going through, that your cells are turning over with the greatest of ease or in whatever orientation feels right for your soul's evolution right now. And we'll see you at the top of Sagittarius season, December 1st, for another foray into this world of energetic offerings. And until then, we love you. We miss you. We'll see you soon.